From WIPR in Baltimore, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. In the weeks since President-elect Donald Trump's Electoral College victory, supporters of Hillary Clinton have been wondering how they can leverage her historic 3 million vote advantage to resist the Trump administration and the far-right agenda they believe Trump and a Republican-controlled Congress will pursue. For many liberals and progressives, the election is sparking new interest in grassroots organizing and activism. Today, we're going to explore the emerging anti-Trump movement with two people who know a thing or two about harnessing citizen power. DeRay McKesson, a Baltimore public school official who's considered one of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement, and Ezra Levin, a co-author of a new field guide for anti-Trump activism called Indivisible. Plus, Midday theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the Vagabond Players' new production of The Complete History of America, Abridged. First, the news. And good afternoon. Welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us on this balmy Baltimore afternoon. It's like close to 60 degrees, I think, out there, at least here at the international headquarters of WIPR Industries. I hope it's warm where you are as well. For the 66 million Americans who voted last November for Democrat Hillary Clinton, almost 3 million more than voted for President-elect Donald Trump, his Electoral College victory was unexpected and alarming. Liberals and progressives who had denounced the Republican candidate throughout the campaign as unfit for office have been wondering since the election how best to resist the Trump administration and what many fear will be the dangerous far-right agenda that Trump may pursue. In his farewell speech Tuesday night, President Obama had some advice for those who fear what Mr. Trump and an emboldened Republican Congress might do. Get involved, Mr. Obama urged. Be politically engaged. Be citizens.
Our Constitution is a remarkable, beautiful gift. But it's really just a piece of parchment. It has no power on its own. We the people give it power. We the people give it meaning with our participation and with the choices that we make and the alliances that we forge. Whether or not we stand up for our freedoms, whether or not we respect and enforce the rule of law, that's up to us. America's no fragile thing. But the gains of our long journey to freedom are not assured.
President Obama speaking in Chicago on Tuesday night, he concluded his farewell address by urging Americans to believe in their own ability to bring about political change. That appeal is rooted in Mr. Obama's own experience more than 30 years ago as a community organizer working to help residents in Chicago's impoverished South Side. So today on Midday, a conversation about how opposition to Donald Trump might be organized and animated. Some former Capitol Hill staffers have assembled a kind of how-to manual called Indivisible, a practical guide to resisting the Trump agenda. The guide, which went online last month and has since been downloaded hundreds of thousands of times, is the work of a group of several former Democratic congressional aides. One of them is Ezra Levin. He worked until recently for Texas Democratic Congressman Lloyd Duggett, and he joins us on the line from public radio station KUT in Austin. Mr. Levin, welcome to Midday.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And with me here in the studio is DeRay McKesson. He's here today in his capacity as a well-known political activist and organizer. He's considered a leader of the Black Lives Matter movement. DeRay, it's always good to see you, sir.
Good to be back.
Our phone number here on Midday, if you'd like to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And if you want to drop us a tweet, we're at Midday Tom Hall. So Ezra Levin, tell us about this guide. What's in it? How's it structured? And who's it meant for?
So the guide is premised on just a fundamental truth about how federal policy is made, and that is that Donald Trump's agenda does not depend on Donald Trump. It depends on members of Congress saying that they will enact that agenda. And the great thing about members of Congress is that they respond to their constituents. Every single American outside of D.C., that is, has two senators and one representative. And those two senators and that representative really care about re-election. So that means they really care what their constituents think. Now, in the aftermath of the election, I joined up with a few other former congressional staffers who experienced the Tea Party, and we put together this guide, Indivisible, because we saw what works when constituents stand up and make their members of Congress listen. And that isn't rocket science. It's not that hard. What the Tea Party did to an extraordinarily popular president with huge congressional majorities was a twofold strategy implemented by a handful of pretty simple tactics. The strategy was, first of all, acting very locally, focusing just on their own members of Congress. And second, it was almost entirely defensive. They recognized that the Tea Party wasn't setting the agenda, but that they could respond to the agenda. And that's what they did over and over and over again. The tactics are simple. All it is showing up at your local member of Congress's district office. It's going to their public events when they're trying to kiss babies and cut ribbons. It's going to their town halls when they're trying to show that they're listening to their constituents. And it's making calls. And it's just ensuring that when local media shows up or when the member of Congress sticks his or her finger into the wind, what they feel is what their constituents are telling them. And so we made this proposal in the guide to implement more or less the same strategy and more or less the same tactics to resist Donald Trump's agenda. We feel that right now, progressives are actually in a better position than the Tea Party was 8 years ago. We face an extraordinarily weak president who is unpopular. We face a Congress that has minuscule margins in the Senate and the House. There is no reason why progressives coming together against Trump's agenda can't win going forward.
Do you think you have a real notion of what the Trump agenda is? So many people have, you know, made note of the fact that many of the things that he's said on the campaign trail, he's already retracted or reversed positions on. People have talked about how he's non-ideological, that he cannot be considered a true conservative, for example. He cannot be considered, he's certainly not a person of his word when it comes to longstanding political principles. He's switched his voter registration like 8 times in the last, you know, I don't know how many years. I mean, do you have a sense? I mean, obviously, he was very scary to a lot of people on the campaign trail and given so many of the incendiary things that he said. But what he said and what he's going to be able to actually do, or what he's going to want to follow through with what he's going to do, may be two different things. I mean, what's your sense of where he's headed?
Yeah, I actually think we have a pretty darn good idea of where he's headed. And we have a pretty good idea of where he's headed, both because of the things he said and the things that he's done. He has made nominees to key positions within his administration, and those nominees have made very clear they want to gut climate regulations. They want to gut consumer protections. They want to cut taxes for the wealthy while cutting support for low-income folks. So we know what he wants to get done based on who he's putting in charge. We also know what Congress wants to get done. Senator McConnell and Speaker Paul Ryan have made it very clear that they have thought long and hard about the reforms they want to see implemented very early on in this Congress. And those more or less line up right in line with what Trump wants to get done. So I don't think we're in a wait and see moment right now. I think we've gotten all the signals we need, and we have a pretty good idea of what they want to do.
Indivisible, a practical guide to resisting the Trump agenda, is the document we're talking about. Ezra Levin joins us on the phone from Austin, Texas. He's one of the co-authors of this practical guide. You're listening to Midday on WIPR. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by DeRay McKesson. Now, DeRay, if there's anybody who has his ear to the ground about grassroots organizing, it's you. Do you sense a renewed vigor, an uptick in people's willingness to get involved since the 8th of November?
Yeah, I think that people finally are starting to realize that both a Trump presidency is real, like it's happening, it is coming with the full force, and that what Trump has done so masterfully in an insidious way is he's just managed the pace in a way that nobody thought he could. So you look at right now with all the confirmation hearings happening back to back to back with the press conference, with the repeal of, or the beginning of the repeal of ACA happening, you know, at midnight last night, that Trump is trying to make it move so quick that we won't be able to organize in response. I think what I've seen both here in Baltimore and cities across the country is that people are ready to do something, that they're ready to step up, they're ready to figure out what to do. I think that the organizing community, unfortunately, sometimes defaults to membership and money, that people say, like, join my club, donate money. I think that what the Indivisible Guide has done so masterfully is say, like, here's actually a plan for how you build power or harness power at the local level, at the state level, to make change. I think that's really important. I think that what comes next will be about, can we build coalitions that bring more people into the fold? Can we help demystify the policy work so people understand that this actually impacts them, that it's huge? You know, like, part of what the repeal last night was to take away the clause that allows 26-year-olds to stay on the health insurance. It impacts a lot of people. And so many people have thought that this is like a far-fetched, you know, this is not close to them, but it's big. Or Ben Carson's confirmation hearing today, Ben Carson said, when somebody said, what can we do with people on public housing? He said, the best thing we can do is get them off of it. And that people with LGBT.
And he's been nominated to be the head of housing and urban development.
Yeah, and he said that the LGBT community doesn't deserve, quote, special rights. You know, like, I didn't know equality and equity was a special right in this country. So, to answer your question directly, I think that people are energized. I think that the organizers across the country are working to build apparatus that allow people to really maximize their energy and their time. And the last 2 years of protests in the street have showed that the people have the power, that people power is real. And I think that we'll see that continue over the next 4 years. I'm sad that there will be so much energy put into resisting him and resisting his agenda. I am hopeful that we will figure out how to push for progress in such a contentious environment. And like Ezra said, the margins in Congress are slim, that this is one of the most unpopular president-elects in history. In that there's a majority of people who actually do believe in equity and equality and justice, and we have to figure out how to get to those people.
So, Ezra Levin, there are a number of ways of parsing the election results. Hillary Clinton did get nearly 3 million more votes. However, they were not nearly enough to win an electoral college majority, which Mr. Trump won handily. If you parse it, for example, by counties, there were 2,500 counties that went for Trump. 500 counties went for Hillary Clinton. Now, in those 500 counties, nearly two-thirds of the economic activity in the United States of America was contained. So the 500 counties that Secretary Clinton won represent a vast majority of people who are working and involved and contributing to the economy. Is the point of Indivisible to, as DeRay mentions, to convince those 2,500 other counties, many of which are rural and exurban, is it to convince them to go away from Trump and to stop their support for Trump? What's the primary goal?
So one of the really amazing things that's happened over the last few weeks is just the outpouring of support and interest that we've received, and I know that many other groups on the ground who are doing this organizing have received. We've been contacted by over 113,000 people from every single congressional district in the country. They all want to help resist Trump's agenda. There are 2,500 groups that have registered on our website to say, we're starting a group, we have a group, we've been doing this for years, we do want to help resist the Trump agenda. We're not in the business of dragging people along to convince them to resist Trump. People are already there. They're already doing that. So I don't think this is a matter of us going into those other counties and finding the right people and convincing them that maybe Trump's agenda isn't a good idea. The energy is there. It's been building. And our hope is that we can just help support that energy more.
And DeRay McKesson, there's so many people who are disillusioned and fed up with the gridlock that has grasped Congress and the White House for the last 8 years. This was a stated goal of Senator McConnell in 2008 when President Obama was elected the first time. How do you respond to folks who say, look, if we're just in a position of saying no, the way the Republicans said no to every single initiative that the president introduced, we'll just continue this gridlock. We will continue this stalled government and this ineffective, modus operandi for how we govern our country.
So a couple of things. One is the Democrats, the left, have to be mindful not to take the high road to oblivion, that sometimes obstruction is a is a thoughtful technique if the obstruction will make sure that millions more people have health insurance, for instance, right? Or if the obstruction will make sure that more kids will be able to access health insurance, that women will have contraceptives. So that's important. I'm also mindful that trauma does two things. Whether trauma is racism or the police or any other form of injustice, that trauma either actually takes people's power away or it makes people feel powerless who have power. And that's what we're seeing now, is that like there are a lot of people who don't understand that they actually hold the power in the situation. When Obama, and I was in Chicago, when he says the most important role in this government is citizen, like that is not just a phrase, that is real. And part of the work that comes ahead is like ramping up for 18. It's thinking about like, what does it mean to push back on these nominees? What are the federal programs that we can put pressure on and the federal funding to make sure that it stays in communities? And how can we at the local and state level build the apparatus to withstand a Trump administration? I think that what is scariest about this moment is not only the presidency and the administration, but that the Republicans control more state legislatures, that they have a deep hold in the state and the local apparatus around the country, which limits right now in some ways people's structural power to push back. And there's been so much conversation recently about gerrymandering. You look at North Carolina and some other states, is that I think that this might not be the sexy work that lies ahead, but it'll be the important work that helps shift the power back to people.
The activist DeRay McKesson, he joins me here in Studio A. Ezra Levin joins me on the phone from KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. We'll have more after a quick break. Before we take that break, I want to report from Kenneth Burns, who was down at the press conference this morning held with Mayor Catherine Pugh and Attorney General Loretta Lynch announcing the completion of a consent decree. It was announced this morning at the 10:30 press conference. It addressed 15 areas, including the treatment of sex assault victims, how prisoners are transported, and requires officers to use de-escalation tactics. The consent decree was filed shortly after the press conference began, and the Board of Public Works approved it this morning. Mayor Catherine Pugh said she's not concerned about the cost of the decree. And again, this is a decree mandating reforms in the Baltimore City Police Department. Mayor Pugh said she's not concerned about the cost of the decree. This is reported by Kenny Burns, who was down there this morning, but more about putting the decree into place. So the city and the Justice Department have asked the judge to hold a public hearing before the agreement is made final. We'll have a little more with Kenneth Burns tomorrow on Midday, give you a complete update. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Indivisible, a practical guide to resisting the Trump agenda, with Ezra Levin and DeRay McKesson. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Midday at WIPR.org is our email address. You want to drop us a tweet, at Midday Tom Hall is the handle. Join our conversation. We'll be back with you in a minute and a half.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio. This is member-supported 88.1 WYPR.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, looking ahead to tomorrow's show, as I just mentioned, we'll have an update on the consent decree announced this morning by Mayor Catherine Pugh and outgoing Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And we'll have another installment of What You Got Cookin' with John Shields, the owner-chef of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. We'll have special guests Kathy and Neil Patterson. They're a husband and wife team who has authored a book called Maryland's Chesapeake Bay, How the Bay and Its Bounty Shaped a Cuisine. So they'll share some secrets for cooking up the Bay's best catches, and we'll hear from you all about your favorite Bay-inspired concoctions. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about grassroots movements to block the Trump agenda. Our guests are Ezra Levin on the line from KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. He's a former aide to Democratic Congressman Lloyd Doggett of Texas and a co-author of Indivisible, A Practical Guide to Resisting the Trump Agenda. DeRay McKesson joins me here in Studio A. He's a nationally known political activist and organizer who has played a key role in the Black Lives Matter movement. At Midday Tom Hall is our Twitter handle. Midday at WIPR.org is where you can email us, and you can give us a call to be part of our conversation this afternoon, 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780 to join us here on Midday. So Ezra Levin, one of the things that you allude to in this document, Indivisible, this practical guide to resisting Trump, is the Tea Party's strategy of targeting weak Republicans in primaries, for example. And I wonder, would you suggest that, that folks target weak Democrats and try to get them, if they're centrist Democrats, move them to the left, or if they're leftist Democrats, move them to the center? I mean, I think of guys like Joe Manchin in West Virginia. It's a very conservative state, but he seems to have been able to you know, do that high wire act that allows him to be reelected in a fairly conservative place, but still be a member of the Democratic caucus.
The interesting thing here is that the tactics and the strategy that the Tea Party employed and that we're recommending isn't actually fundamentally partisan. It's not about one party or the other. We see the strategy as working for incredibly deep blue districts, incredibly deep red districts, and those marginal districts. The impact will just be different depending on what your member of Congress looks like. But regardless of what they look like, they're running for re-election, so these strategies and tactics can work. If you've got a really deep blue district, these tactics will ensure that that member of Congress is bold in his or her opposition to the Trump agenda. If you've got a really deep red district, the tactics and strategies will ensure that that member of Congress maybe isn't so vocal in supporting the Trump agenda. And if you have somebody on the margins, you have a real possibility of bringing them over to our side to oppose the Trump agenda. So we advocate that in all cases. You don't need to look at the ideological spectrum to figure out whether or not this works. It works everywhere.
Holly from St. Michael's sends us an email. She's on the Eastern Shore in a district represented by Congressman Andy Harris, who's the only Republican member of the Maryland congressional delegation and a very conservative member. Holly says, I love the Indivisible Guide. Last week, after reading the guide, I paid my first ever visit to my congressman's office. That's Congressman Harris. Many progressives here on the Eastern Shore are discussing how we can use it to keep in touch with our congressman, Andy Harris, and we're particularly concerned with the proposed defunding of Planned Parenthood. So, DeRay McKesson, Andy Harris lives in one of these gerrymandered districts that you alluded to, as does, you know, Representative Sarbanes, J.P. Sarbanes, Dutch Ruppersberger, everybody who's a congressman in or a woman in, and there are no women, but a congressman here in Maryland lives in a highly gerrymandered district. Andy Harris lives in a conservative district. So Holly may not be a conservative. She's a progressive who happens to live in his district. But how is she going to make a dent in a gerrymandered district that Mr. Harris is representing?
So first, that's an incredible example of people power. And the Indivisible Guide, as we've seen with this example, like, is already helping to mobilize people and give them concrete things to do. I think that what we know as organizers is that it always starts like one or two people, five people together, and it snowballs into something else. So I think that her going to the office will empower one or two or three more people to do it that she knows. And that's how all good organizing happens. So I have a lot of faith in that. And I'm sure that this congressman has not seen many people come to his office before. And if this increases the pressure on him and makes him show up around the issues differently, like, that is really important. I think about the protests in St. Louis. It started because people like came outside and more people came outside. Is that there's always a ripple effect with organizing, and it has to start somewhere.
Ezra Levin, the president on Tuesday night in his farewell address said that democracy does not require uniformity, but it does require solidarity. So what do you think that means for the progressive movement in the age of Trump? To what degree are we required as Americans to show solidarity with our president?
I was so inspired by those words. I think I was probably one of many people in small groups watching that speech and getting teary-eyed. I think that what this comes down to is treating an attack on one of us like an attack on all of us. That Trump will try to implement a divide-and-conquer strategy, and he will win if we allow him to do that. The place where progressives find themselves is attacked on all sides now. And we can't start choosing who we're going to protect and who we're not going to protect. The Indivisible Guide is named Indivisible in large part for that reason. And so we see right now a movement building across the country. It's a movement that folks like DeRay and the Black Lives Matter movement, people who got involved in Occupy, the civil rights and community organizing groups that have been doing this for years, have been building up for a long time. And I've been really inspired over the last few weeks of seeing a very diverse set of organizations and people coming together to oppose. And I think that speaks to exactly what the president was saying.
And DeRay McKesson, one of the other things the president said was grab a clipboard, collect some signatures, and run for office. This is something that you were an early adapter on yourself. You ran for mayor of Baltimore last spring. Are you seeing, like, within the Black Lives Matter movement or with any of the other grassroots movements with which you're familiar and involved, a predilection for becoming more politically involved in the system, in the political system, running for office and trying to do something about these, you know, majority of legislatures that are now in Republican control across the country and the majority of governorships that are held by Republicans?
Yeah, I think that people are starting to understand that there are many ways to build power, many ways to harness power, that voting is one of them, that being in the street is one of them, that running for office is one of them, going to your senator's office or congressman's office or city councilman's office or calling is one of them. So yeah, I think that people are starting to think about running for Congress. I think that this is also what the Tea Party did really well, is that they started to take over sort of seemingly small positions in counties and cities, and then they worked their way up to taking over seats in Congress. And I think that the Indivisible Guide is a helpful resource to begin to put people in position for that. I think the protests were an incredible resource in many ways to help people see that they could actually do this too. And I think about so many meetings I've been in, so many rooms I've been in with younger people pushing to make the system better and understand that at some point this can't be musical chairs just with the same people that have been running the system, that there has to be new energy.
David from Baltimore, welcome to Midday with DeRay McKesson and Ezra Levin.
Thanks, Tom. Great show. You have two of my heroes on your show, so thank you for putting them on.
Sure.
I have a group that I started shortly about a week after the election, realizing that the only choices we really had were to leave or to organize. And I have a comment and a question also. The comment I have is that I'm finding that people who are interested in getting organized and doing something, really need help in learning about the process. And these are educated people. I'm an attorney, and people who I'm reaching out to, our group that has about 100 people now, are professionals. But people still are looking for, there's magical thinking about the 25th Amendment solution or an impeachment solution or this type of thing. And people need to kind of help. They need to be educated and learn about how Congress works, how congressional offices work, what realistic solutions are. The focus of our group, and this is coming to my question, the focus of our group is very narrow, although it's broad, which is Senate elections in 2018. Now, of course, we live in the blue state, and we live in the blue island in the blue state. And so one of the things that the challenge that we're facing is, how do we work with our colleagues, our progressive colleagues in places, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, where there's endangered Democrats, and we have a group of activists here in Baltimore who are saying, I want to do something. And there's only so many times that you can call, you know, Senator Cardin and tell him he's doing a great job.
Right. Well, David, thanks for your call. Ezra Levin, we got an email from Renee who says essentially the same thing. He says, I'm from Maryland, a largely Democratic state whose representatives agree with me. So what can I do to politically counter the Trump initiatives with which I disagree?
Yeah. So this kind of comes back to the fundamental theory of change here with the Indivisible Guide, which is that, again, it does not matter if your representative is blue or your senator is in a deep blue state, that what we really need in Congress right now are loud, vocal leaders pushing against the Trump agenda. I think Senator Cardin often does an amazing job. I think it still is helpful for his staff and for him to receive input from the state saying, hey, have you issued a press release yet on X new abomination that's come out of the White House? Have you introduced some sort of legislation that's going to rein in the atrocities that are being committed? What are you doing right now today that's actively going to prevent Trump from implementing his agenda? All of those things are incredibly valuable. And I will say positive reinforcement is really rare. And what I'm doing right now is dodging a little bit this question of, hey, I'm in Maryland, how can I help folks in Michigan or Wisconsin? I think folks need to recognize that the system of government we have is representative democracy. So your literal voice in Congress are your two senators and your representative. You may really like them, you may not like them at all, but regardless, that's your voice. Now, I'm all for groups sharing best practices, sharing information across states and districts. We're seeing a lot of that happen already, and I would encourage that. But when it comes to where you put your boots on the ground, we really strongly encourage folks to focus on their two senators and representative.
And DeRay McKesson, another focus for a lot of folks is already the 2018 midterm elections. Historically, people, particularly younger people, do not come out during the midterm elections. I mean, President Obama lost both of the midterm elections that took place during his 8 years in office. They came out to vote for President Obama. They did not come out to vote for Congress and Senate seats in the interim. 2018, do you think that there's going to be more organizing directed towards getting people out to vote, number one, and number two, countering this the many initiatives of voter suppression that are going on around the country?
Yeah, I think the Democratic Party did not take seriously this election, the sense of disillusionment with the system, and didn't take seriously the people who said that they just weren't going to vote because they didn't want to participate in a system that was corrupt. I don't believe that sentiment, but enough people did that I think it required the party to respond. It'll be interesting to see how the election for the DNC chair goes and how that shifts the party strategy. In terms of 18, I think that people see the stakes so clearly right now that if we don't win in 18, it'll simply be because we have not figured out how to communicate the gravity of the issues and the situation and the context. I think that there are enough people who realize that something has to change, and I think the party has to show up over the next 2 years and show people that it's a party that cares about these issues, not just during election time. So I think that the nominations are really important. And like Ezra said, it's like, are people actually going to be the representatives of the people every single day? Like, will they release the press statements? Will they do town halls, even though they've already been on the right side of the issue? Will they lobby their peers in Congress? I think that people are going to be looking for all of that when 18 comes around. And I do think that it will be helpful for the party to do two things. One is reach out right now to people that didn't vote. We know who was registered to vote and didn't. And then, like, start to build the capacity of young people. So, like, 16, 17-year-olds now who will be voters in 18 should be taught about the issue so that when 18 comes around, this is not the first time that they're being engaged.
And what about the influence of money, DeRay? I mean, obviously, people have talked about this for decades now, meaning that if you're a member of Congress, you're running every 2 years, which means you're running all the time. And you are elected because you've got a capacity to perhaps buy more TV commercials than the person who's running against you. I mean, is the power of money being attenuated and diluted? People referred to the fact that, you know, Jeb Bush had all sorts of money and all sorts of historical connections, and he went nowhere against Trump in the primary process. I mean, is the money situation, DeRay, a different situation now? And then, Ezra, I want to ask you the same thing.
Yeah, I think that money is obviously very helpful. I think money doesn't necessarily sort of trump, no pun intended, a message. And I think that we will see technology continue to upend and change the landscape of who decides what messages reach people. I think that TV, like the news, for instance, is the single best way to get to the most consistent voters, like the older people who vote often. But again, I think we're going to see the demographics of who votes change, and I think technology will change that landscape. So like Facebook, Twitter, ads online, I think will be new game changers.
Ezra, what do you think? Is money going to be less of a factor in 2018 than it's been historically?
Look, money doesn't vote. People vote. And if our side is energized and out there and actually getting in district offices, going to public events, people spend millions and millions of dollars trying to convince folks to take action. What we see right now is an organic movement of millions of people taking action on their own to defend their democracy. And if that occurs, if this movement that we're seeing pop up right now is indeed a movement that builds on itself and grows over time, That's going to be the big force in American politics this year and next year. It's not going to be big money.
Carrie in Canton, welcome to Midday with DeRay McKesson and Ezra Levin. Thanks for your call.
Hi. I didn't expect you to get to me. I had a question because I wanted to write a letter to the Republican House saying how the Affordable Care Act has actually helped me grow my business. And if they cut out the subsidies, I'm going backwards. So does it make sense to write our letters to Mitch McConnell and the head of the, those guys, even though they're not representing this state?
Yeah, Ezra, you make a point of the locality being a very important parameter of this.
Yeah, great question. You know, we get that question a lot. Folks see the chairs of the committee or the Senate majority leader and make the kind of obvious assumption that we should be communicating with those folks because they're the decision makers. You know, as somebody who worked in a congressional office, I can say we got a lot of communications from folks outside of state and outside of district. I would strongly, strongly urge folks to not contact folks who are outside of their congressional district, just because it's not an effective use of time. In general, the way Mitch McConnell or Representative Ryan is going to treat a communication from somebody outside their state or district, it's going to be that message gets thrown into the trash or just ignored. You might as well just talk to yourself in your living room, which sounds a little bit harsh, but that's the hard reality. If you want to have impact, and sharing your story about how you're personally impacted is going to have a lot of impact in Congress. Members of Congress love those stories, love using them. But the way to make your voice heard is share that with your representative or two senators. They might be able to make a speech on the floor of the Senate or the floor of the House and say, my constituent is being impacted in X way. They might be able to spotlight that. But Mitch McConnell and Representative Ryan aren't going to do that.
So, DeRay McKesson, as we finish up here, let me ask you a question about social media, which you have, you yourself almost single-handedly brought to the fore of organizing after the events in Ferguson. And now you have how many followers on Twitter?
About 600,000.
600,000. Of course, President-elect Trump has, I don't know how many million. So people are using social media to go directly to people. With groups like Facebook and Google Groups and other ways of organizing people, is there a danger, do you think, that these messages are so diluted? I know that after the election, my Facebook feed was, pummeled with, sign this petition to end the Electoral College, sign this petition to impeach Trump, sign this petition for that and the other thing. Is there a way of channeling what's going on in social media so that it doesn't become so much noise like so much of the rest of it?
Yeah, I think that Facebook has a fake news problem that they have to figure out, and I think they're making steps to do it. I think that Twitter, it is harder for bad messages to stick, which is good. I think that we'll continue to see organizing online, the avenues emerge. I think the Indivisible Guide is a great example of it. I think there are going to be new tools that come up. You see a lot of dialers right now. So you can dial a generic number and it'll automatically connect you with your senators and your representatives. Like, that is a new wave of organizing that we hadn't seen before. I think that we'll see more people phone banking, a whole lot of new ways of organizing that demystify the process and change the gatekeepers, I think, is what's coming next.
All right. Great discussion. DeRay McKesson, thanks so much. And Ezra Levin, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Ezra Levin is a co-author of Indivisible, a guide to political organizing informed to some extent by the successes of the Tea Party. We'll have a link to the Indivisible website on our website, wypr.org/midday. DeRay McKesson is an activist and organizer and a leader of the Black Lives Matter movement. Coming up, the modest aspirations of the new show at the Vagabond Players in Baltimore. They've set out to present the complete history of America, abridged. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick will explain. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio. Member supported 88.1 WYPR.